You are tuned in to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings, and welcome to A Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. Tonight, I'm delighted to welcome Penny Kelly back to the show. Penny is an author, teacher, speaker, publisher, personal and spiritual consultant, and naturopathic physician. In 1979, while working as a tool and process engineer for Chrysler Corporation, she experienced a full spontaneous awakening of Kundalini that completely changed her life. She left Chrysler and returned to school to study the brain, consciousness, perception, cognition, intelligence, and intuition. In 1987, Penny moved to Southwest Michigan and for 25 years has operated Lily Hill Farm and Learning Center. Today she travels, lectures, and teaches a variety of classes and workshops. She maintains a large consulting practice, writes books and poetry, raises chickens, cattle, and grows organic vegetables and fruits. She is the mother of four children and has written 6 books. Three of them are ones that I've read, The Evolving Human, The Elves of Lily Hill Farm, Robes, Getting Well Again Naturally, and then Volume 1 and 2 of Consciousness and Energy. So you can find out more on her website at www.pennykelly.com. So now let's welcome her back to the show. Hi, Penny. How are you?
Hello. I'm fine. How are you?
Oh, I'm good. It was so nice to be able to attend your talk in Ojai recently. I think that was about a month or two ago.
Yeah, thanks.
And I was on my way back from a memorial service for my uncle, which was quite a whirlwind 2 days. And it was a wonderful stop in Ojai, and I loved your presentation there.
Thank you. Thank you.
In fact, you know, one of the people that was there, Ayn Cates Sullivan, was on the show last week. So that turned out to be a happy coincidence as well.
Yeah, I really like her. She's just
Isn't she wonderful?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, and Belle, her illustrator, is quite a character, too. It was amazing. It was like we were all supposed to be there. And I think your projector was giving trouble at the beginning, but it kicked in somehow, magically.
Mm-hmm.
The elves and the fairies took over, and the projector kicked in. And you know, I really got a sense of the vast panorama of life and the drama and the dreama that we're going through from your presentation. And you know, I love your book, The Elves of Lily Hill Farm, but you've gone so far with consciousness and dimensional research. I think it would be important for people to hear some of your thoughts and experiences that you've had with higher beings and other realms. You know, so we can begin to kind of deconstruct what's going on today, because I know most of us are, you know, occasionally on shaky territory with all of the horrific events that are occurring around the world. So maybe you can shed light on some of that, because you wrote about these higher dimensional beings in Robes, so that was a whole book worth there. And they had quite a lot to say about our condition and where we're headed, didn't they?
They sure did. I really wasn't very smooth with them in the beginning, but you know, they were very persistent, and they were so businesslike and so cheerful and so professional for beings that, you know, were from another dimension. And they insisted on showing me these pictures. That's what they call them. You know, we have some pictures we would like to show you. And I finally caved and said, okay, thinking I was just going to look at a few pictures. I wasn't sure what they meant by that, and then they would be gone. but that didn't happen, and they continued to come and visit. And the pictures that I saw were actually, in most cases, three-dimensional and sometimes even personal involvement in the scenes of the future and what was happening. And always their focus was on massive changes, and they had one message that they kept harping on over and over again, or repeating over and over. And it took me a while. They needed to, to keep coming at me with that message, and that was that we were responsible for our future and for what we were creating, and they wanted us to see what was coming and to begin to prepare for that and to begin to create wisely and well. And so there wasn't any area of life they didn't address. And by the time they were done with me, a year and a half or 2 years later, I was thoroughly changed in terms of what I expected the future to be. And even then, I kind of went around that information, was like, oh, thank God they're not coming around anymore. Yeah. And then about 10 or 11 years later, after I had moved to Southwest Michigan, they showed up at the foot of my bed one night and said, we want you to write that down. And I was like, oh, huh. No. That's like a book of predictions. I hate that kind of book. But no, you need to write that down because people need to begin preparing now.
Wow.
And that was about 1992.
Wow.
And they said that we would have approximately 10 to 15 years to prepare, and that the most difficult period would be between 2014 and 2021. And lots of changes, lots of shifts. And if we were prepared, they said, you need a vision in order to be able to hang on to get through what you're going to go through. And otherwise, you'll see nothing but destruction. And they wanted us to see nothing but opportunity, nothing but possibility. And they wanted us to address our power, which it took me a while to get that, and then to have enough guts to be able to say it.
right.
And so here we are, 2014, and it's getting messier and messier out there. And
oh, yeah.
We need to be investing in infrastructure now and not waiting.
And, oh, yeah.
Yeah, and we need to be addressing the issues of, you know, the development of consciousness. They were very, very big on that. I saw some amazing things about, you know, what could be done with consciousness that was more developed than what we currently have. And, you know, they had just addressed everything, politics, leadership, environmental stuff, the fact that we would be returning to our, what they called our tribes of origin.
Uh-huh.
Food issues, they said that there would be a really big issue around food, a number of big issues, and that there just would not be enough food. And that was something at that time that I was totally, I thought they were off the wall. So, you know, medicine, healing, saw some amazing things around healing, and went into the future as much. We went to 2080, roughly 2080, which wasn't too far, although it was 100 years from where I was looking. You know, this was 1981, 80 and 81 and 82. And then went to 2413, where I saw very similar but things, but they had evolved more, saw some amazing technology. What happened with education? What happened with politics? What happened with manufacturing and shipping and transportation and trade and just all kinds of stuff?
Well, can you share some of those things with us so that we have an idea? Because it certainly looks like everybody's got their head up their ass as far as, just being stuck on stupid with, you know, pouring money into atomic research and oil and gas and all the things that that feed the, you know, the machinery of greed and power. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the wars and that whole technological industry that's being supported for killing people. And then GMO foods and fluoride and chemtrails. I mean, we're really, the book is being thrown at us. And where I live in Northern California, we're just now getting into a third or fourth year of drought, and it looks like all of California is going to be hit with major drought, and people will be moving from Los Angeles and Southern California. And why there aren't desalinization programs going on, you know, you hear that it's too expensive, but yet, you know, they've got money to pump oil everywhere. You know, it just, it's a crazy, insane world.
It really, at this point, doesn't make a lot of sense. And I think
right.
the biggest thing is that none of what the leadership is doing nurtures life. None of it nurtures life.
Right, none of it.
Yeah, right. And so
it's very disturbing.
Yeah.
And not only that, but we're paying for it, and they're milking us. And then they're using the money to control us and dumb us down. I mean, it really is it's really ironic.
I know. I started preparing unconsciously at long, you know, not long after they came into my life.
Uh-huh.
And then finally, you know, probably 12, 15 years later, it became a much more conscious effort, but one of the things that I think bears mention at this point, because it's so revolutionary, I just thought they were nuts when they said it, was that we would have to face the fact that there were several key pieces in our lap. One was they stressed over and over again that there would be this global network that would grow to encircle the entire world. And the internet was not really in existence at that
right.
point. And they stressed again and again that this was a substitute for the telepathy that we used to have and that
right.
we should
right.
take the time and trouble to develop again.
Right.
And that this global network was a means of communication, and that the a great deal of, corruption, would be revealed via this internet, and that we should, at all costs, keep that internet up and running, and if it went down, do everything in our power to put it back up again. And I said, so, you know, why is that network so important? And they went into a whole thing on corporations, and the bottom line of corporations was that the whole purpose of a corporation was to teach us to work together internationally and how to do that, and the, you know, the channels of communication, et cetera, because there would come a time when the corporations would go down
mm-hmm.
and the money system would possibly go down
mm-hmm.
and that we would be left, you know, without the things we needed unless
right.
we woke up and said, you know, money is just a go-between. It's just an illusion. We
right.
really don't need money. What
right.
we need is to, you know, go get the stuff that we need and make it into what we need it to be and you know, put it out there for everybody, as
right.
many people as want it, and that the corporation would, and the channels of communication would have taught us who and how to communicate with and who had what, et cetera, and that we would, if push came to shove, we would be able to keep our trade system intact by this global network without the use of money, and that you know, money was a terrible obstacle in terms of personal growth and development at this stage. Not that
absolutely.
Money was bad, but that it was an obstacle. So
absolutely. There's no question in my mind, and that's a conclusion that I came to, a couple of decades ago, and when I walked away from my last job and I swore I'd never work again for another person or company. And, you know, so, yeah, I totally agree with that, and I see it coming. The question that many people have is the timing of it, because there's so much chicanery and so many trillions of dollars being moved around electronically by players that we don't know that, you know, there's a lot of monkey business. In fact, it's mostly monkey business, and the monkeys are running the zoo, and we're in it.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, it gets a little spooky because we are kind of like blind people, you know, running around like chickens with their heads cut off, and nobody's looking at these things, it doesn't seem. Mm-hmm. Except people like you and me and all the people that are listening and the people who will hear this and so on and so forth.
That's true.
And, you know, it just, it makes you wonder, you know, when is the tipping point? You know, when will humans begin to realize the insanity and how important it is to start to take our power back and not just, you know, go to the drive-thru at McDonald's or whatever the, you know, the fast food horror of the day might be with who knows what is in it, and, you know, start caring about each other. And it's just, it just seems like, I read about the idea that there are negative ETs that have kind of infiltrated various aspects of the of our life and that are actively doing everything they can to bring us down, you know, as far as destruction and lowering consciousness, and it seems to be working.
Well, you know, we have lost a tremendous amount of consciousness. We have lost our ability to access a pretty wide range of frequencies. That really is the essence of expanded consciousness. That means that you can be conscious from 0 to 60 hertz, and most people are really only conscious for a very small portion of that spectrum, and it runs between roughly 10 and 16, 18, 20 hertz, and that's it. You know, below that, they're just not there, unable to function, and don't have any recall of what's happening at those other frequencies. And so we're handicapped quite a bit.
Right. Well, apparently there is hope because the beings that were they're so full of light that they had to have robes to kind of keep you from being blasted away by their brightness. They would not have contacted you, and of course all the many other people who have had personal contact with positive beings from other dimensions who are warning us and perhaps altering and adjusting their own futures by seeing that, you know, if we don't get it together, their future might run off the track. There may be implications for their futures as well.
Yeah, I think one of the things that kind of comforts me at this point is that there was a point when the robes were showing me the future. There was a point at which a breakaway group who had been working undercover for a long time, had access to tremendous technologies, had contact with beings from other places, had engineered some of their technologies and things like that, had visited their planet, their solar systems, their, you know, lots of contact there, and they just basically broke away. There was, at that time of that breakaway, there was also this massive amount of disintegration happening around the world as the nations came down. The concept of nationhood had just become a barrier to communication, and
right.
so nations could not last because they were in the way of people loving, learning about
yeah.
one another. And so the breakaway group took off, and you know, they basically didn't really care what was happening with us. The nations came down, and there was a lot of chaos, and the result was that the people who had been leading this split were no longer there. But the people like, you know, us, who
right.
were not in that 1%, or not in the breakaway group, they didn't announce that they were leaving. They didn't leave any notice that they were no longer running things. And it took the people of Earth probably 50 years before they figured out that they were basically focused backwards on a whole bunch of stuff that used to be, that wasn't anymore, and they couldn't see through the leftover shell that had happened, you know, that was still in place and that was running, you know, in a very poor fashion. And, you know, it just took a very long time before we woke up and said, you know, we're expecting this and we're expecting that to collapse or to fall apart or somebody to, you know, jump down our throats or crack the whip, and nothing happened. And, you know, and as it turned out, the big families who were kind of at the top of the people who were left behind, they ended up taking each other down because they were too competitive, and they were when there was no competition left between the haves and the have-nots, then the haves began to compete with one another, and they basically ended up destroying one another. And it just took a long time for people to figure out what was happening, and once they did, along about between 20, 35, and 45, then, you know, it was a whole new world. And by 2050, things were really being re-engineered and rebuilt. And by 2080, it was an entirely different configuration. A lot of people had been lost in the meantime, or, you know, just didn't make it for one reason or another. But the people who were left were full of ideas and change and new infrastructure, new technology. So,
wow. You know, so many people have been talking about the breakaway civilization, and I think that it's become there's more awareness that people have that there is a breakaway civilization now.
Right.
And that the major scientists that talk on the media and the rest of it are projecting, you know, well, in the future, by 20 this, 20 that, we might have this or that. Well, they have all that stuff now.
Yes,
and, yeah. And that's been very well concealed, you know, since we were all kids. I mean, probably my grandparents' generation, there was some element of a breakaway civilization that was continuing on then. So when this civilization leaves, it will be a breath of fresh air for all of us. So those of us who are paying attention and those who are inside of these various groups and factions will probably alert those of us who are on the periphery that are, you know, yakking about this stuff. And then we'll get on the perch like birds and say, oh, did you hear that the breakaway civilization took off already?
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah.
You know, and it's okay. We can live now. It's okay to be creative and to express yourself and, you know, and to stop worrying about money and this and that and the other thing. Just do what you love doing and care for each other. And that means each other around the world. Mm-hmm. You know, there just can't be any separation and division anymore because we're in a time of unity consciousness. And
Lance, let me interrupt. That was the split. The split that I saw with the robes was that some people went with technology,
yes,
amazing advanced technology,
yes,
and the rest were left to develop themselves.
Yes.
And the potential of the human, and both choices were okay, you know. And yet you could choose, you know, to not develop if you didn't have any interest. But by 2080, and certainly by 2413, there was the whole purpose of life was to develop yourself. It was development of potential.
That's wonderful, because then that starts before birth. I mean, basically, then you have the whole process of acknowledging that we are not just a shell, an empty shell, that there's a spirit that's coming in, and the consciousness can be raised, and those communications, those telepathic communications that you're talking about, can occur prior, and they do now. Mothers are aware of who is communicating, saying, well, I'm checking you out to see if I want you to be my mom, and you know,
yes,
and
right.
Lots of people are having this experience. They just aren't talking about it because nobody wants to be considered crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And you talk about it all throughout your books, and I thought, my God, she's zanier than I am.
That's because I've had communications from our grandparents that, you know, notified me and said, I'm going to be born as a boy at such and such a time, and I'm going to be born so-and-so, and this is what I'm coming back to learn, and I need help. And
yes, I was just reading that in your book, Consciousness and Energy, Volume 1, about your grandfather who told you that he was going to be coming back. And tell that story, because that's really fascinating.
Well, during the early days of Kundalini, I had just a number of visits from this voice that said, this is, you know, your Grandpa Kelly. And I was like, okay, all right. Trying to, you know, I didn't know much, but I was taking it all in. He said that he would return as my third grandchild. There were a number of things that he said to me, encouraging me in terms of my intuition and development and my clairvoyance and things of that sort, you know, bits and pieces of information to give to my family. And I did put some of that, I think, in The Evolving Human, my first book. And then I might have mentioned it again in Volume 1 of Consciousness and Energy. But he said, I'm coming back as your third grandchild. And at the time, my children were young. They were little, and I was like, grandchildren? You know, that's 100 years away. So he then finally had a visit in which he said he was going away to study and that I would not hear from him again until he returned. And so I didn't hear anymore, and I completely forgot about it. So roughly, I'm going to say 10 years later or whatever it was, my daughter in Germany is pregnant for my third grandchild. And I, all of a sudden, one night, there's Grandpa. And it was August, and he said, I just want you to know that I'm going to be entering the body soon, and I will be returning to live with you, where I hope to learn and to work with you. And at the time, I was like, you know, I just had goosebumps, and it was like, oh, my God, that's my third grandchild. Oh, my God, you know, so I'm all freaked out over that. And a little bit of story that behind that was that my daughter and her husband had just said that they were going to stay in Germany. And here, Grandpa had said he would be returning to the U.S. where he was going to come and live with me. And I thought, okay, I must have heard that wrong. That must be incorrect, because they had applied to stay in Germany. Well, that was refused. And it was refused, you know, several months after the baby was born. She was born October. And somewhere in December, I think, the application was turned down and they were brought back to the States. And my daughter, lo and behold, said, I've had enough of Army life. I'm coming home to the farm. I'm not trotting around the world dragging three little kids. And she told her husband, come on back to Michigan when you're done in the Army. So they arrived and they got settled here, and they were here for 6 weeks, and then he went off to, report back for duty again. And that granddaughter did end up living here, and we homeschooled her. And so one day, she's like 4, 5, 6 years old, something like that. And there were three grandchildren that I was homeschooling. And I was working with the oldest one doing some math. And the two younger ones, I said, you guys go in the library and get something to read, and I'll be with you as soon as I'm done, with Steffi. So up on the very top shelf at the ceiling was a book that my grandfather had given me when I graduated from high school. And the name of the book was The Blue Nile. And I had, I had saved that book because it was the one thing my grandfather had given me. I'm working with Steffi on the math, and Amanda and Craig disappear into the library. And about 5 minutes later, out comes Amanda with this book, The Blue Nile. And she's looking at it and looking, and she puts it in front of me, like right in front of my face, and she says, Grandma, where did you get this book? And I couldn't even speak at that minute. I said to her at that point, I can't even remember what I said. I think I had notes in my journal, which I then put in the book. But basically, I ended up telling her that I had gotten the book from her, and that she had been my grandfather in my last life, or in her last.
Wow.
And she then proceeded to share a few memories of that life.
Wow.
And I, at that point thought, kind of a, well, I'll be damned sort of thing. And then, later my father came. My father died in 1996, and he had been gone about 6 years, and he came and said, I'm going to be born to your niece. That's about a year and a half from now. I'm going to be a little boy. And, and so sure enough, there
Wow, another one. Well, by that time, you were probably better prepared for the shock.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's all right. It's not something that most people are paying attention to, and that isn't, reincarnation has not been a huge focus of mine in terms of who's coming back and going to who until the third one occurred. And at that point, I was like, wow, this is a system. This is a system of development that we have or could have, et cetera.
Yeah. And also that it seems that the people closest to us are often entities or souls that we incarnate with repeatedly. There seems to be a pattern to that. That, in other words, we're kind of, just like we have friends, some friends drop off, and then we have a core group of friends and so on and so forth. It does seem to be that way, that the people who we end up with in the long run are often people that we have already had these conversations with and planned out, when you see me in the year 2016, I'll be wearing this, and we rehearse so on and so forth. So that's kind of a, I kind of accept that now.
Yeah.
But it also, don't you feel, because you had thousands of lifetimes that you saw, doesn't it seem that that is all a simultaneous in-the-now occurrence, that all of these different experiences that seem to be playing themselves out, I was just getting to the point where you were trying to figure out, is there one core being? And then, of course, you could go on further and say, well, yes, there is, and it's it's the one.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's one atom, and it's so fast that it creates everything that's everything that is and isn't. So.
Well, you know, the thing that I think is important about that whole 6 or 7 years of research was my discovery that of how powerful consciousness is. When I first, you know, entered into that moment of what I'll call the 10,000 selves, mm-hmm. and there they were, and I was completely engulfed in every single form of myself that I had ever been or had ever thought about doing. And so there were some of those lives, some of those beings or selves that were very highly developed, almost mm-hmm. as highly developed as I was. Mm-hmm. And there were some that were just a wisp that repeated the same thing over and over and over. Because that was, they didn't have enough energy to do anything except try to maintain existence. And
right.
I realized in that moment what soul retrieval was, that it was an attempt to gather all of the energy that we had spewed out in every direction mindlessly and to reassemble that energy as a fully conscious being.
Oh, my goodness. That makes so much sense.
Yeah, we are incredibly powerful.
I'm just now reading a book on soul retrieval by a guest that's coming on in a couple of weeks, I think, or a week. And it's just perfectly synchronistic, of course.
Of course.
Of course, that, you know, everything happens just perfectly as it's supposed to. And so I'm just now starting to kind of work with these, with that idea more actively of recalling my own various aspects that are out there floundering and wisping away. And, you know, because it's necessary. It seems that if you don't start doing, taking an active role in your own soul work and soul journey, that you lose energy. You can lose energy and spend yourself, in a sense.
Yes, that's exactly what happens.
Yeah, and
exactly. And
yeah.
So the goal is to not only regather some of that energy each lifetime, but you come to this place where you're so peaceful and so centered that you're not having any thoughts. You're not spewing out thought and creation and form in a million different directions.
Yeah.
And when you do want to create something, it is powerful and it is deliberate and it's kind of mind-blowing.
Oh, absolutely. And a lot of that, according to my training, having done EST and a lot of other different things, is connected with, you know, keeping your integrity, telling the truth.
Yep.
Especially with yourself, and always keeping your word. And when you keep your word, that makes your word really powerful. When you say, I'm going to be somewhere at 10 o'clock and you are there, or you know, make sure that you've made arrangements if you're not going to be there, then when you say something, it is as if you're saying, let there be light.
That's right. That's exactly right. And you have to be conscious when you say you're going to create something, which in this case, let's just say it's an appointment.
Yeah.
You have to be conscious of what are the requirements of that, and will you have the time and the space and the consciousness at that projected moment, and will you make the time and space for that appointment to happen in a timely way? And, you know, that's just the beginning.
Yeah, exactly. And I found for myself, I'm doing a lot of work with the Gurdjieff and the Uspensky system, that consciousness varies from moment to moment, and that we don't remember ourselves, and that our consciousness fluctuates, so that we might be conscious in one moment, and then we go back to sleep, and we don't realize that much is occurring unconsciously, and that's where it seems the programmed belief systems and the technological inserts and the manipulation and programming and propaganda all make their mark, is that they happen at this subconscious or unconscious levels.
Yes.
And so by working on our consciousness like you have done all your life, setting an example for us to on how to do it, the logistics and the nuts and bolts, because it is something you can do. There is an actual knack to it, like you've documented. Then
right.
We can begin to piece together our lives like pearls on a string and then tie a knot so that we don't go back so far.
That's right. That's right. One of the things that the little men in brown robes, they never really bemoaned or whined or cried about anything. They never were anything other than cheerful and upbeat. But they avidly pointed out that we had lost so much inner authority, that everyone on the planet was waiting for permission to do anything.
Yep.
Nobody was taking the initiative because they didn't have permission, because they didn't think for themselves. They didn't act for themselves.
Absolutely. Wow, that's one of the most distressing things that I see all over the place, and it's hard to grasp, and it's hard to accept, but it does seem to be the case.
It is, and part of that is that everything has lost consciousness. Even the food. And so you cannot hold higher consciousness to any degree
if you do not have
high-density nutrition and high-energy food.
That's right. Well, that makes me wonder if, the Earth itself hasn't lost consciousness or hasn't kind of, there's a lot of talk about the ascension movement and the shift, and perhaps part of the Earth's consciousness has been siphoned off, or she's being distracted on multiple dimensional levels, would make sense.
In consciousness and energy volume 2, I talk about that a little bit, about the fact, once Dr. Levengood and I figured out what crop circles were, we then went on to do some more work in just with energy in general, and it became pretty clear that the Earth was fully conscious. That was something the rogue had said to me, and I could not accept that in the beginning. But by the time I had worked with Dr. Levengood for 15 years, it was clear that the Earth was consciousness, and that crop circles were patterns that were her attempt to communicate with us, as well as with other planets, as well as with other beings, as well as all of the creatures. Those are the Earth chakras.
So
we have this amazing set of stories and myths now that have grown up around crop circles, and nobody really understands the science. And so when I wrote about the science part of it, because science is a really important piece in my way of thinking. We can't make the full shift if we're just going to try and do that on a, on the wings of mythology. We have to have the truth about the science, and the science has just sort of been overlooked with everybody. I think I've got the answer, and I think I know this, and I know, and da-da-da. And when you actually get down to, what happens in a crop circle, and how does it happen, and why does it happen, and when does it happen, then you can really begin to get some answers. And so I think it became apparent by the time, Dr. Levengood just died last September, but by the time he was ready to go, he said to me, I wish that I had said more, right out there, that it is all about consciousness.
Oh, yes. One of my guests, Dr. Carmen Bolter, has been to Egypt quite a few times, 20-plus times, and she, on one of her trips, she took a scientist who has a consciousness measuring device out into the sands, and they were able to measure the consciousness of various places and what that signified. And they, I think Russia has done a lot of work with consciousness, and of course China in their own way.
And so did Levengood. We measured the consciousness of the planet, and we were able to track the consciousness of the entire collective population.
Wow, is the collective now are we beginning to rise, or are we continuing to fall in consciousness? Because it appears to me that there's a fall in consciousness that's still in process.
It's very, very dynamic. It changes from moment to moment. You know, we could, on the equipment in the lab, pinpoint, like, for instance, we pinpointed the moment of when people became aware that the London bombing had gone off. We were able to pinpoint the moment of the winning touchdown in the Super Bowl.
Wow.
You know, where people were at Christmas and Christmas Eve, and just all kinds of stuff. And
interesting. Is that all in your second book on consciousness?
Yeah, that's Consciousness and Energy, Volume 2. It was really about...
I'll have to get that.
Yeah, it's about my work with Dr. Levengood and his work with me. And
that sounds fascinating.
We hit it off and, you know, ended up being together, working together for 15 years. So.
Well, now, you know, people are going to be asking me, or they'll be mad at me if I don't ask this question, which pertains, it kind of dovetails into what we're talking about, and that is the shift in consciousness, or the shift from the dark ages to the golden age, however you want to say it, and you've mentioned it in your, in talking about, you know, the timelines and the rest of it.
Mm-hmm.
What is your perception of that? Of the event, there's rumors on the internet about an event and this and that and the other thing. What is your feeling and perception and research? What does that show is really going on?
A couple of things. The first thing I think is that people want to see a finalizing type event.
Yeah.
When I was with the little men in brown robes, that did not happen. It was too convenient for people to, you know, that a lot of people just want to wake up one morning and discover it's all fallen down, and now they can say, okay, let's get on with it.
Right.
But that's not the way that it happens.
Okay.
It really is a messy, dragged out, drawn out of affair. There are some danger points. I did see the look and the shape and the feel of World War III, and we're almost there. And in World War III, they said it's not going to look like every other World War, you know, where you get guns lined up here and trenches there and guns over here and you shoot at one another. This is going to be everybody is struggling, fighting with everybody else over little regional conflict, financial conflicts, all sorts of conflicts, and nobody's happy. Nobody.
And when does that start? When does that? I mean, we're in it now, aren't we?
We're in it now, and it reaches its peak between 2014 and 2021. So the things that I've seen, there are. You know, I am afraid that there's maybe one. Possibly two, but maybe one more, what I'll call false flag event that really brings us to our knees, but maybe not. There have been two that I have tracked right up until, you know, the time when they were supposed to happen, and they didn't happen because they couldn't get clear in terms of making a clean getaway and not being able to be caught, not being able to be tracked. And in the second one, there was betrayal involved, and so that one didn't happen either.
Does the public ever wake up and figure out that 911 was an inside job?
You know, very, very belatedly. Very belatedly. And here's one of the things that I think is really a critical piece. The people who are in power now are writing the history. They're defining what's happening.
Right.
And they're saying this one did this and they did that and blah, 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 and who was in the right and who was in the wrong. And none of that is true. None of it.
Yeah.
The entire history that we have had for the last 4,000 years is all a made-up story designed to get control, and it has succeeded beyond... I won't say beyond their wildest dreams, but it has succeeded, and I think it's going to fall apart at the last minute. But
Well, what can you tell us what really happened in the last 4,000 years? Because of course we have the idea that that there was a man walking the earth a couple thousand years ago, and then the Vatican and the fall of Rome, and the Vatican rose, and what really happened? And then of course you go back to Egypt, and you've got the Anunnaki stories from Sitchin, and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
Can you flesh a little bit of that out for us?
Well, in a nutshell.
Okay.
Let's start with a nutshell, and then maybe we can elaborate a little bit here and there. The thing that most people believe, the story that most people hold to be the history of mankind, goes something like this. You know, we had the dinosaurs, and then we had some cavemen, and then about 9,000, 10,000 years ago, we had these beings who figured out, or these men or whatever, these men who figured out how they could plant seeds and gather crops instead of being hunter-gatherers.
Uh-huh.
And then they continued to develop from there, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
So that's the common story, and we're at the peak, and the United States often acts as if and sounds as if it is the peak of development.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
So none of that is true.
Right.
You know, the history of humanity goes back millions of years.
Yeah.
And there are artifacts that have, like, I forget. I'm just going to make these up, but these are very close. I won't have the date. It was either a baby shoe or a necklace was found in the area of Massachusetts, and it was dated to something like 2.3 million years ago.
Wow.
Just all kinds
wow.
of stuff
Whoa.
That has come and gone.
Yeah.
And we had a history in which God was a woman, or God was considered to be female, was a feminine aspect. And what happened was that there was this huge move of a bunch of hill people, mountain people, very, very rough and very, very dangerous. And they decided that they were they had to expand because there were climate changes happening. And, you know, they took out a whole civilization, an entire globe worth of consciousness that we're now at the bottom. We're now in the pit. And we have never been lower.
Right.
And in terms of consciousness and in terms of our awareness,
yeah.
And we have a number of what are called Venus figurines that go back 40,000 years. So where is the 40,000-year story that accommodates these religious statues? And how do we explore that if we supposedly only got rolling to any, you know, noteworthy degree about 5 or 6,000 years ago.
Yeah, right, right.
So what you begin to see when you really study the in-depth story is that there's a tremendous, tremendous amount of misrepresentation, lying. There's been, if you read the work of Dr. Anatoly Fomenko, he's a Russian mathematician. He's a fabulous mathematician, and he's got this.
And what's his last name?
He's got this series of books out.
Anatoly
Fomenko. F as in Frank, O M E N K O.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Okay. And the name of his book series is History, Fiction or Science. And he was a young man who was in his right after college, and he was a mathematician. And as it turns out, mathematicians are, they're responsible for the chronology in history. In other words, what happened first, second, about what time did this happen? And old documents are dated with the position of the sun and the moon and the planets, etc. Because calendar systems can change a lot. But the, you know, the sun and the moon, that's very predictable. It's a mathematical equation. And so he was given some sort of assignment as a young man, and he tried to, you know, he said, well, if this is the angle of parameter D or D prime or whatever it was, then this should have happened at this point in time, and he couldn't get it to line up. And he took it to his superiors, and he said, hey, this timeline of history is off. And they said, shh, be quiet. Just let it go. Leave it alone. And couldn't let it go. And so the long and the short of it was that for the next 40 years, and he's now, I think, in his mid-60s, he began to dig into history, and he began to assemble accurate timeline. And
well,
what
speaking of timelines, I hate to say this, but we're almost out of time.
Okay, yeah.
I can't believe it. I could talk to you for hours. And before we have to sign off, I want to make sure that you have a chance to mention your website and that you come back in a couple of months and we continue this conversation, because this is just fascinating.
Okay. All right. And so I'll say the website. It's my name, www.pennykelly.com. No extra E's in either name.
And I will probably have read your volume 2 by then, and I'm going to check out into Anatoly Fomenko as well. I can't thank you enough, Penny, for coming back, and I look forward to our next conversation in Fireside Chat. So thank you so much.
You're so welcome. Thank you for having me.
All right, and good night, everybody.